Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Crime Keg, Hazy Hoppy Homicide. I'm your host, Shantae, and I am beyond excited because this is the very first episode of The Crime Keg. I'm so happy. Thank you all for tuning in. If you're listening to this soon after its release, then you're most likely here because you're one of my friends or family members. I love you all. I appreciate all the support. But if you're listening to this maybe a few weeks down the line after a few more episodes have come out, or even a year from now when you find me at the top of the iTunes podcast chart, you know, a girl can dream, then that means you're here for one of a few reasons. Either you love true crime, you love beer, or you're like me and you're obsessed with both of them. With that being said, I did want to take some time out of this first episode to tell everyone a little bit more about myself and why I came up with the idea for The Crime Keg, you know, just in case you're one of those lucky few that stumbled across this podcast and you don't know me. I also wanted to let everyone know a little message about the audio. I am currently sitting in my mother's house in my childhood bedroom, specifically in the closet of my childhood bedroom, recording this with a $15 microphone that I bought off Amazon. I am so sorry if the audio is not the best, and I also apologize if my dog Willow, who's downstairs, barks at someone going by on a bike. I'm sorry if my neighbor Jim starts up his Harley. I do hope to get better sound equipment as I get more listeners, but for now, I really want to make up for that in quality content. So please bear with me and this not so great audio. So, my name is Shantae Fensel. I'm 25 years old, and I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. But I've spent most of my adult life outside of Ohio, more specifically outside of the US. I started studying abroad when I was in high school at the age of 16, and that was when I went to Italy. I then came back and went to Washington, D.C. for university, where I studied international relations, which only further propelled me into the world of living and working abroad, because I moved to Morocco to teach English for 2 years right after graduation. I then came back to Cleveland for a few months, only to pack up again and move to San Jose, Costa Rica. That's where I was working for a volunteer abroad program for high school students when coronavirus came around. And with the pandemic, a lot of people in the industry of study abroad had to be let go from their jobs, including myself. So if you're listening to this right now and you've been affected in any way by coronavirus, I just want to let you know that we are all in this together and I feel your pain. This is partially an outlet for me to use up some of my new free time, use it for something positive, and, you know, just break out of that slump that we all are in with what's going on in the world. If you also enjoy true crime and beer, and this is a way for you to escape the horrors of what's going on outside of this podcast, then I really hope I'm able to help you in some way, or even inspire you to start your own podcast, do something new to help take up some of that time that we all have now. On a more positive note, I do have a job interview coming up at the end of this week. So hopefully by the time you'll hear my next episode, I will be gainfully employed. But if I'm not, that's fine. It's better for all of you. You'll get your episodes faster. But I do hope to get a job so that I'm able to buy a more expensive microphone and give you better audio quality. Now, in those few months that I lived back in Cleveland between working in Morocco and moving to Costa Rica, I got a job working in the copy center for a law firm that dealt a lot with wrongful death cases. And most of those cases were murder investigations. So I highly recommend anyone who's looking for employment. That's a great job if you love true crime. You get to see a lot of things about the cases. I got to make copies of autopsy photos. I got to look at coroner's reports.
I'm not going to talk about any of those cases because I signed a lot of documentation, confidentiality. I don't want to get sued, so I promise I won't talk about any of those. But it's a lot of fun. I hope that anyone that's interested can look into that for employment. I would have stayed there, but of course, my first true love is travel. I had to go as soon as there was a job available abroad, but that's something that's super fun, so go out there and get it. Anyways, I loved that so much, and it sparked my interest in true crime. I started to listen to more true crime podcasts, some of my favorites, which I'm sure a lot of you have heard of if you're in the true crime community, are Crime Junkie, My Favorite Murder, and That's Why We Drink. Those are some great ones to listen to, and I draw a lot of inspiration off of them for these episodes. So that's really the style I want to go in, is talking like we're friends, just letting you know a lot about the different cases and sipping a nice beer with you. Going into the beer side of things, I love going to local breweries. Every time I travel, I go to different breweries. Even when I lived in Costa Rica, I started a beer passport to go around to all the breweries in the country, which I would have hit all of them if the pandemic didn't come and make me come home. But I want to do as much as I can right now to support local businesses. I know this is a very tough time for local businesses. They're struggling. And if I can get out some publicity for them so that you can all go and try new breweries, then that's what I'm going to do. I want to use my platform for that reason. And the way I want to structure this podcast is talking about a true crime case and then accompanying it with some publicity for a local brewery in that same area. This week, we have our crime set in Cleveland, Ohio, and we also have a local brewery, my favorite brewery in Cleveland, that I want to talk about. So, without further ado, let's talk about the murder of Amy Mihaljevic and Noble Beast Brewing Company. Ooh, did you hear that theme noise? Come on, you all loved it. The beer can opening, the knife sharpening. Get it? True crime, beer. Okay, if you didn't like it, that's okay, but give me 5 stars in the reviews just for that, because it took me about a good hour to figure out how to mix those sounds together to make that awesome noise. So give me some love, please. Let's get back to our story today. We're talking about Amy Mihaljevic, who was a beautiful 10-year-old girl back in 1989 from Bay Village, Ohio. Now, Bay Village, for those of you not familiar with Ohio, is to the west of Cleveland. I'm from the eastern side of Cleveland, and the only reason I know Bay Village is because back in 2007, they had an insane softball team. Their middle school softball players, I don't know what those girls were on, but they were like college-level athletes. They beat us every time. I couldn't keep up with them. Not that I was the best softball player, but everyone lost to them. They were amazing. So if you're out there and you played middle school softball in 2007 for Bay Village, then you are a beast. So congratulations, you won. Bay Village also has a really cool nature and science center called the Lake Erie Nature and Science Center that a lot of schools take their students on field trips to in the greater Cleveland area. I went when I was younger, really nice place. If you're ever in Ohio, definitely visit. It's something really fun to do. So Amy, being 10, was in elementary school back in 1989 on September 27th, and on that particular day, she had a special guest speaker. It was a police officer from the local police department there to talk about stranger danger. And I'm sure you all remember having these conversations in school. Don't take candy from strangers. Don't help anyone find their lost puppy. We all got the same speech. And Amy was there listening right along and didn't fear anything because she wasn't talking to any strangers. Or at least she thought. Now, Bill Shield from Cleveland's Fox 8 describes Amy as being a feisty little girl who loved horses. I feel that. I totally do. I was obsessed with owls when I was younger, and I remember if you tell anyone that you're obsessed with an animal when you're younger, you're going to get gifts just about that animal. I had owl everything. And Amy was no different. Amy had lots of horse apparel. She loved horses and she wore it all the time. She even had this very special pair of blue stud horse head earrings that she wore every single day. She loved those earrings. So Amy that day, after hearing that presentation about stranger danger, was supposed to go straight home where she would meet her brother Jason that was released from school after her. Jason and Amy had this pattern every single school day. She would arrive home first, then Jason a few minutes later. They would each call their mother and let them know that they arrived home safe, and then their parents would arrive home a few hours later. But this day, Amy didn't call her mom to let her know that she was there because she didn't go straight home. Jason arrived home, and when he didn't see Amy, he was a little concerned. He called his mom and told her, you know, hey mom, Amy's not home. Do you know where she is? And Amy's mom, Margaret, remembered hearing something from Amy telling her, you know, I have some tryouts after school. So she wasn't particularly worried, but she just told Jason, hey, give me a call back and let me know when she gets home. A little while later, Jason calls and says, mom, I'm sorry, Amy's still not here. I don't know where she is. Maybe you can try and find her. So Amy's mom started to get a little worried at this point, like any parent would. Where is my child? So she was about to pack up and go home to start looking for Amy when her work phone rang. And when she answered, it was Amy. And Amy said, hi, mom. And her mom, of course, wanted to know, where are you, Amy? What are you doing? Amy was really short in her answers and responded saying, I'm fine. I'm home. Her mom was happy, relieved that her daughter was back home and hung up with her, but noticed, you know, she didn't really sound like herself in that moment. So once she finished work and got home, she was really excited to go in and talk to Amy and see what was going on with her. She wanted to know why her daughter sounded so strange on the phone that day. But when she got inside, she didn't see Amy. Instead, it was just Jason telling her, Amy still isn't home. And like any parent would in this moment, Margaret freaked out. She got in her car, she went to the school, couldn't find Amy, looked around for her. It was terrifying, I assume. I'm not a parent, but I know I would be flipping over everything in the town looking for my kid. She called the police and they took this investigation very seriously. This is something that I'm very happy to hear, because if you're not really into true crime, then maybe you don't know this, but a lot of times police departments don't take missing person cases seriously until 48 hours after the person's been missing. Children a lot of times are assumed to be runaways, and if you're older, then they just assume, hey, you know, this person just doesn't want to be bothered with you right now. They'll show up in a few days. But luckily, they took this case very seriously from the beginning. They even brought in the FBI the very next day and started talking to anyone they could to find out where Amy could be. One of the people that the police spoke with was a classmate of Amy's that Ashley Flowers from the podcast Crime Junkie describes as letting the police know that Amy had a bit of a secret that day. Amy wasn't going straight home, she told her friend at lunch. She was going to meet one of her mother's friends that had been calling her on the phone for the past couple of weeks. Now, this friend of her mother's told Amy that, even though she had never seen him before, he knew her mother and knew that her mother was getting a promotion at work and wanted to have Amy come with him after school one day to pick out a gift to give to her mother for her promotion. So Amy was really excited. She was going to go shopping with this friend of her mom's, and this is why she didn't mention at all during the presentation about stranger danger that she was going somewhere with a stranger, because According to Amy, he wasn't a stranger. She'd been talking to him on the phone, and he was a friend of her mother's. So that day after school, Amy walked down the street and went to a shopping plaza nearby to meet this friend of her mother's. A few witnesses at the shopping plaza that day did remember seeing Amy, and they saw her with an older man. Now, these witnesses were the same age as Amy, about 10 or 11, so their idea of older isn't exactly what we think of as older. I'm sure that myself at the age of 25, I seem a little old to a 10 or 11 year old. So this man that they described later on in artist sketch was about late 20s, early 30s. And they remember seeing Amy with him. They saw him, they saw her. He had his hand on her shoulder, kind of moving her around and directing her on where to go. And when they turned back around, they were gone. And that was the last time anyone would see Amy Mihaljevic alive. The investigation for Amy went on for months. The entire time, her family and the rest of the community of Bay Village were praying for her safe return. But unfortunately, that investigation came to an end on February 8th of 1990. According to Nicole Varansky for 19 News, Amy's body was found by a jogger in Ashland County, which is about 50 miles southwest of Bay Village, in a field off the side of the road. Amy had been beaten in the head and stabbed twice in the neck. Her body had been undressed and then redressed again, leading to theories that she was sexually assaulted. Something else was missing from Amy's person: her blue stud horsehead earrings. Now, a lot of times, serial killers will take a victim's clothing or a special item to remember them by, called a trophy, if a lot of you aren't familiar with true crime. But this is something that a lot of people in the investigation point out to keep people on the lookout for these blue earrings. If you see them anywhere, it could help lead to catching Amy's killer. I'm going to talk more about the investigation, but before I continue, I wanted to stop and give you all a little word about the app I'm using to record my podcast. Psst, it's a sponsorship. So, you know, listen to this episode a lot because I could get paid. After Amy's body was discovered, and this went from being a missing persons case to a murder investigation, law enforcement started to get a lot of calls from families letting them know that their daughters had opened up and admitted that they got similar calls before Amy went missing. These girls were getting calls from a stranger when they were alone at home, describing himself as a friend of their mother's. Now, it wasn't always something about he wanted to meet up with them for promotion. It could have been he wanted to get her a gift because they were long lost friends, or sometimes had nothing to do with the mom and he was just talking them up. Now, one of these girls actually was more skeptical than some of the other girls who received the calls. And she was more skeptical for a specific reason. She had been raped before, and her rape, she survived. She was able to come back home, but the rapist took a specific item from her. And this is where it gets weird. He stole her horse head earrings. Of course, this connection immediately sparked the interest of law enforcement, and they started to look and see if there were any more connections between this girl and Amy Mihaljevic. They found that both girls attended Holly Hill Farm, which is a place where you can board horses, take riding lessons, and both young women attended this farm for horse riding lessons. Now, they did look into some of the workers here, some of them that they thought could be responsible for Amy's murder and these other phone calls that these girls were receiving, but all of these people checked out. They all had alibis, so there was a dead end there. The case did go cold for a while, and it wasn't until later on that an author by the name of James Renner released a book titled Amy, My Search for Her Killer. And in this book, he talks about a theory that he has. He looked at some other things that these young ladies had in common and found that they all visited one place that was the same. And that was the Lake Erie Nature and Science Center that I spoke about earlier in the episode. So all these girls went there and they all had to sign in with their phone numbers and names to keep track. And when they went back later to try and find this book that they signed, they found that it was missing. So this could be a big part of the investigation. I highly recommend looking into that book by James Renner, listening to other podcasts, specifically the Crime Junkie episode on this podcast. Now that is available through their fan club app, but it's not available on their regular streaming platforms. Another great reference for this episode is the Lake Erie Murder series. They did a 3-part series on the Amy Mihaljevic murder. And of course, there are news articles out there like the ones I've mentioned from Fox 8 and 19 News that really give a lot of great information on her case. Amy Mihaljevic's murder is still unsolved to this day. I really pray and hope that we can bring justice to Amy and closure to her family and the Bay Village community by finding her killer. If you have any information on the murder of Amy Mihaljevic, please contact the Bay Village Police Department in Bay Village, Ohio. Now, let's move on to something a little more positive. I want to support a local business and make light of this episode, make it so that we aren't listening to something so sad without any positivity to it. So let's support a local business. And the business this week is Noble Beast Brewing Company. Noble Beast is my absolute favorite brewery in Ohio. It is in the heart of Cleveland, right downtown off of East 9th Street. And it was actually only 2 blocks from where I worked at the law firm. So I used to go there with a colleague after work, and I even chose this to be the location of my going away party when I moved to Costa Rica. So one of my favorite beers there is their IPA. It's a West Coast style IPA called Evil Motives. Let me get up my information here because I want to let you know some more specifics about the beer. It is a 7.2% ABV, 68 IBU. It's a classic, lightly bitter West Coast IPA. I do think that it's not as bitter as most West Coast styles you see, but it is very bright, not very hazy at all, like New England style, which I personally prefer New England style IPAs, but this one's very drinkable. I really like the Evil Motives IPA that they have. If you are in Cleveland, I highly recommend going to try it. It's not overpowering with hops. It's very well balanced. And I think it's something that you would really enjoy if you are into IPAs. If you're not, then I do want to recommend another beer that I am dying to try. I haven't had it yet because I haven't been there since COVID. But it's something that sounds delicious and has great reviews on Untappd. And that is their Peacemaker Coconut Vanilla Beach Stout. Now, this has an 8.5 ABV, 35 IBU, and the description that they have on their website is a toasted coconut and Madagascar vanilla flavor that fades into milk chocolate and toffee flavors. Thank you all so much for tuning in to the very first episode of The Crime Keg. I am truly honored to have anyone out there who is listening to this episode, and I hope that you enjoyed it. I also am very happy that I was able to support Noble Beast, and if you do have the opportunity to visit this location, maybe you'll see me there, and we can talk about true crime in person with a nice cold beer. Until next time, I'm Shantae Fensel.